The meeting of the Veterans Affairs Division will come to order. Let's take care of the minutes from the last meeting first. Representative Faust moves the minutes of February 6, 2009. Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The February 6th minutes of the Veterans Affairs Division are approved. Okay, we'll start with bills first, and Representative Junkie. All right, Representative Junkie, welcome to the committee, and I'll move your bill to get it before the committee here. I'll move House File 541 and that it be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs, the Policy Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 541 is very simple, and Mr. Chair, I know that as you're a member of the Tax Committee, you're very familiar with this issue, so hopefully we can get it there and you can advocate on behalf of the veterans. Members, we've seen this before in the legislature, why we do what we do here, I have no idea, but this came to me from a constituent. Basically, there's a, for those of you that are new, there's a property tax exemption based on your amount of disability for a disabled vet. Up to 70%, as you can read, 1.17 is a certain amount of market value that's exempted, and then 100% on 1.19. Unfortunately, when that disabled vet's spouse leaves them, they're given, as you can see, one additional assessment year to realize that credit. And so really what we're doing for the most part, I mean, World War II, Korea War, these are folks that probably aren't getting remarried, they're elderly, they probably only have a few years left in that home, and at a time that it hurts them the most, we're adding to their property tax burden. I don't know what the fiscal note is, I suspect we'll see that in taxes. I can't believe it's insurmountable. And we should just be allowing surviving spouses to realize that credit until such time as you see on 2.1 or 2, they transfer, dispose of the property, or I added remarry, because that's always been one of the tax arguments as well. Some wealthy knight on shining armor will come in and remarry these surviving spouses, and they don't need the money because it's a wealthy knight, you know. So we address that in here, and maybe that'll get us through the tax committee this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. Comments? Representative Faust.
Quick question, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the state paying this to the counties and townships and cities, or is this just the other people in the county that make up the tax?
Mr. Chair and Representative Faust, I believe it's just like Green Acres, something you're very familiar with.
Yeah, in which case there wouldn't be any state system
correct.
At all. Then.
That's correct.
And that's right. It's a shift within the taxing jurisdiction. That's right. Anything further, members? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Junkie. I appreciate you bringing this forward. I think it's a great provision that we should have put in the original bill, particularly in light of the fact that if there are receiving a survivor benefit compensation, that once the individual who's receiving the compensation passes after age 65, I believe, that SBA benefit goes down to 55% of the amount that the individual receives. So the surviving spouse would actually have a significant reduction in terms of benefits that individual receives, and that would be exacerbated if all of a sudden we start to throw additional property tax on. So this is a good provision.
Thank you. Anything further, committee? Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Junkie. Is there any statistics on how many disabled veterans currently take advantage of this property exclusion?
And again, Mr. Chair, unless the council has some notes or fiscal notes from the last tax bills, I do not have those. And I suspect Representative Lanchesky will request a fiscal note on it, and we'll know how many. But maybe Mr. Cleary knows in the past to feed that in.
Mr. Cleary.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, no, actually I don't have the number, but I would expect it to be quite small. For one thing, there aren't that many disabled veterans that in the state of Minnesota that actually have 70% or higher.
Mm-hmm.
And of them, some don't have spouses. And of those who do, many do not predecease their spouses.
Mm-hmm.
So I would expect that fiscal note will. So I would expect that number to be pretty small. And, mm-hmm. and yes, you're right, Representative, there'd be a very negligible, if any, state fiscal note because the cost gets spread to other taxpayers.
Thank you.
Okay, anything further for members? Good. This will get discussion in the tax committee, but it's a good bill. I'm glad you brought it forward, Representative Junkie. Any closing comments?
No, and again, I'm bringing it forward on behalf of a surviving spouse who lives on a farm south of, in the southern part of my district.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'll renew the motion that House File 541 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs, the Policy Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The bill is approved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, Representative Lilly, are you ready? Representative Lilly. Okay, what you have for us is a resolution today. I'll move it to get it before the committee. I'll move House File 303 that the file be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Policy. Representative Lilly.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It is a little bit of an odd duck here that I have here, but it's, I think, very, very a vital piece of legislation. It is memorializing the Congress of the United States to appoint independent counsel to investigate prisoners of war and missing in action. So, in that sense, it is a little different. I mean, it's not actually a bill. This would send this on to Congress and to encourage them to appoint independent counsel. Right now, there's many folks that have served our country and they're still unaccounted for. And just a couple examples of past wars from World War II. There's 78,000 folks that are still unaccounted. Korean and Cold War eras. 8,300, Vietnam War, 1,800 folks, Gulf War, 3, and during the current conflicts, we're still missing 12 folks that are unaccounted for. There's been quite a bit of effort in the past, and to the credit of Minnesota, during the last session, I have a letter from Mr. Daly, and I believe that's been passed out. He's the executive director of Minnesota Won't Forget POWs and MIAs. And what's currently happening, there's been clearly executive orders, but they're just really not doing a great job of enforcing currently and the follow-through. And in the letter, if you look in the second paragraph, which is pretty powerful stuff, you know, there were 280 members of the U.S. House of Representatives, for example, last session that really believes that we need to do a better job. And the entire, to the credit of Minnesota, the entire Minnesota delegation supported doing such. But this is just another way for us as a state to say this is important and that we value the service that these folks have made. And that we hope that our U.S. government will do the right thing. so I'll stand for questions. I was going to have the big star wrestler. I'll probably bring him later if this goes to any other committees, but Mr. Kowalski was going to come, but I gave him short notice, so it's my fault. So.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, isn't these things already done? I know I get email updates from the Department of Defense where they are doing searching in Vietnam, and when they've recovered, along with the government of Vietnam, they've recovered remains of missing in action. Isn't this already happening? There are people out there from the Department of Defense that are investigating MIAs. I'm just...
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, thank you for your service, by the way.
Yeah.
And I went to an event this fall, and he said a little bit of his story, and it's quite a story, so thank you for that. Yes, I think they are doing some, but I think it's of vital importance that we do even a better job. You know, it's not only the families that want to know, I would think, but, you know, even as a soldier, I think you'd want to, you know, your story to be told or to be home and, you know, as best we could. So I think we can always continue to do a better job. So I'm, in a way, I'm not really answering your question. Yes, they are doing it, but I believe it's a problem of not doing as good of a job as possibly we could.
So. Just a follow-up, Representative. So basically, this will just... get Congress more into the act. That's basically what we're doing here, not the Department of Defense.
Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Yes, I believe that to be the case. Maybe Mr. Cleary can speak to it too. He brought wrote a real nice outline here, overview, and you know, this what we're doing is a little different. It talks about the this is a memorial resolution, which is a little different than some of the others, but I think it is calling to better action, to do a better job. So,
Mr. Clear, you have anything to add to that?
No, sir. I think that summarizes it pretty well.
Okay, thank you. I've got a list going here. Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, how many veterans are currently missing in action or POWs from the Vietnam War and the Gulf War? Do you have any numbers on that?
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sanders, again, I'm not an absolute expert, but the data that I've been given for the Gulf War, I was surprised to hear that there's three soldiers that are currently missing, and the current conflict that's kind of going on now generally is the 12. And then did you say Vietnam? Or
mm-hmm.
And then the number that I was giving was 1,800, and maybe, you know, there are some experts on your committee, maybe Mr. Severson or Representative Severson would have more accurate information on that.
Representative Severson, to that point.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this is kind of one of those issues that I have not had a real close encounter with. I know I've talked with numerous POWMIA advocates, and they are continually working, to try and put the pressure on to bring our troops home, the ones that have been left behind, and bring some. I know they've got a very strong presence nationally in terms of, trying to bring it to the forefront. I guess my question would be, Mr. Chair and Representative Lilly, I appreciate the kind of the push forward here, but I'm just wondering why would we take up the time to push this forward. I think there's been significant movements in the past to do this, and is this really going to add to the effort? Is this an effort to try and bring this before the new Congress and say, hey, this is something that the state of Minnesota believes is, should be on the front of your plate? That's the question I would have, Mr. Chair and Representative Lilly.
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Sanders, I hope that, sorry, I kind of deflected you there, but Representative Severson, it's, clearly it's, we have all these big things with our budget deficits and all these other things in our state, but at the same time, I think we can do things that are you know, very important. Nice thing about this, it doesn't cost anything. It does cost you time this morning, and, you know, of course, last night we were very sensitive about time, so I hope I don't get cut off. But, you know, I just think it's important. You know, I mean, that's, and I'm sure you agree with that. It's, you know, does it help? I hope so. You know, I don't know what makes someone do what should be done already. You know, it seems pretty common sense to me, and I'm sure it does to you as well, you know, to do right by the people that serve our country. I just believe it's a good way to go. To be honest, it really wasn't my original idea. My senator came to me with this, but, you know, the more I look at it, I really believe it's the right thing to do. And the timing is perfect, and I think his intent was with the new Congress, with the new president, to, you know, to really make the message clear that this is important, you know, was important, is important, and we need to really do this. So.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lilly, I would, I guess, in that light, I would wholly support this in terms of putting this before the Congress and saying, hey, we got a lot of important issues on our plate, but there's nothing more important than bringing the last one home. Making sure that the guys who are waiting for us have some hope.
Good, thank you. And I've got a list going, but to that point, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lilly, and to the point that you made, I actually worked in this area for a while. I was a notification officer, and I had to go out and notify families during the Vietnam War when kids were killed. And one of the things we did for missing in action was we had to go back every month to let them know they were still missing. Even though we knew that we had a body, we couldn't identify the body in some cases because, for example, they'd been napalmed. And there's not much of a person left after they've been napalmed. And I think that the graves registration people are continuing looking, you know, in all the areas, everywhere from Korea, Vietnam, whatever, for the remaining bodies. And I don't know if our technology has come up to date now with DNA and things like that to identify these people, but I can remember going into the morgue in Saigon, and we had 12, you know, pieces of charcoal sitting on the slab, and those were people that couldn't be identified. So I think that may be a part of it, where we do have bodies that just are parts of bodies that we haven't been able to identify. And I do think it's a great idea just to remind people, you know, that we've got an issue.
All right. Thank you, Representative Newton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Newton, thank you for your comments. And again, service. I look around the table, your table. You have quite a distinguished panel there.
Okay. Representative Bowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the letter here from Richard Daly, and it points out that although, you know, there certainly has been a lot of effort, that there have been some problems with the current system, which I think is what brings to light why this is an important resolution to try to get some of those resolved. And you know, it talks about some places where maybe there's information that's out there that isn't being made available to the families. And so, although, you know, we're certainly doing a lot, I think that it is important to do everything we can. And if it brings one more person home, if it brings one more family closure, I think that it's all worthwhile. So I think that this letter is an important piece of information for everybody to take a look at.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of a continuation of Representative Faust's comments here. In that letter, it talks about last session. Congress did make a shot at this, and it says it never reached the floor for debate or vote. Do you know, did they dump that because they thought this was like just some organization trying to generate something for themselves rather than be on the issue, or did they, you know, what was behind this? I mean, I can't imagine anyone not being in favor of the goal of what you're trying to do here. That's a wonderful goal, and thank you for bringing it. But if as it says here, 280 members of the House co-sponsored a resolution which sounds very similar to this. What happened?
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Doty, and I'm sorry. I need to apologize because yesterday was, or the last couple days, and I didn't actually get a hold of Mr. Daly and the wrestler till late in, you know, yesterday. So not early yesterday, but it was late, of course, very late notice. I fully don't know, but I can definitely find out what the story is. But again, it's just, you know, I think there's lessons in this for all of us, you know, as legislators and elected officials that, you know, sometimes maybe we, you know, there are things that are important that we don't do. So hopefully we can do the right thing in this case. I don't know.
And
sorry,
again,
it's not a very good answer.
Representative Detmer.
Again, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lilly, doing the right thing is what this is all about, and thank you. Hopefully we'll get there, but I do think that's an important thing to look at.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, we might have a dialer friend, which is always nice. Mr. Chair, is that all right?
Yes, and while he's coming up to the table, Representative Detmer.
Yeah, I just thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this. My question is, are we going to follow up? You know, when you send this off to Congress, who's going to get it? And then who's going to carry it on and present it to the floor in the Senate or in the House? And how do we follow up to see if they've really gone through with this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, you know, again, in the letter, and I don't know, but, you know, to Minnesota's credit, everybody in our delegation voted for this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we could, you know, contact one of them, whether it's, you know, the Senator Klobuchar, because she's senator, but, you know, if we can, Representative Klein or you know, any of them, I'm sure, to carry the water and carry the day for us. I think it's to Minnesota's credit that all of them were on board. It's kind of nice when that happens. Maybe my dial-up friend here can
dial-up. Okay. My name is John Cox, and I'm the legislative chairman for the American Legion. I think there's one person that you're leaving out of this whole circle, and that's the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General John Vesey. He was appointed by the president to work, and he worked very diligently on the POW-MIA for years. And I'm sure that he has a lot of research and a lot of information that if contacted, he lives in Garrison. I'm not sure what his phone number or his address is, although I used to haul him up there in a helicopter quite often. But he could probably lend a lot of light on this subject, because I'm sure he's very well educated on this, because he spent many trips, time and trips over there looking for POWs and MIAs. And I'm sure that he's probably got a lot of notes and information that he could help you with on this one.
Okay.
I'm going to stick around.
thank you, Mr. Cox. Anything further? Okay, good. Appreciate that, Representative Lilly. I'll renew my motion that House File 303 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Policy Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Okay.
And Mr. Cox.
Okay, next on the agenda we have representatives of the Minneapolis Veterans Home here today who will be bringing us up to date on the actual care at the home. And they are Judy, let me know if I'm pronouncing this right, Judy Kirky, Jill Smith, and Mary Zabel. Oh, excuse me, Judy Kirky Coleman, I'm sorry. When you before you start, also identify yourself for the tape also.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Judy Kirby Coleman. I'm the administrator of the Minneapolis Veterans Home. Today is my anniversary of my fourth month. I have Jill Smith with me, and she is an assistant administrator, director of nursing. Jill's been at the Veterans Home for 13 months. And to my left, I have Mary Zabel, and she's the assistant administrator, and she started December 10th. So.
Oh, okay. Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. We did, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we did prepare some information for you. We would like to update you on some of the happenings and the events at Minneapolis Veterans Home. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. We really appreciate it. First of all, I'd like to update you on the surveys that we've had and monitoring that is still happening. We did have our DVA, our Veterans Administration survey, in December. We received that final written report, and we've submitted a plan of correction. They did say that we had significant improvements in care delivery, staff education, and overall operations and management. They did identify that 16 of 157 standards needed some improvement, and that just included areas of improvement that they would like to see. One was in credentialing and privileging, and that's already been corrected and completed as of December 08. There was an issue with physician documentation, one example, and we do have some training scheduled for March. Nursing documentation, they talked about some issues with assessments and care plans, and we have made corrections, and we also have some documentation training scheduled for February 23rd of this month. Resident care, there was one issue with a technique in pressure ulcer treatment. That's already been corrected. There was one-to-one staff training, and also others were re-educated. We did have medication incident reporting issue, and those types of issues will be included in our 223 documentation training. And then in environment, they had an issue with some crowding in one of our dining rooms. We do have a main dining room, and then we have dining rooms on the care units, and one is rather crowded. So we are looking at the entire home then, and looking at our dining space to see what we can do to enhance the dining experience. We did have a belt break in the ventilation system in the smoking lounge when they were there, and that was actually immediately corrected even prior to them mentioning that. So, and then we have had Pathway Health Services in the facility, and they continue to provide services and feedback, and they did a mock survey in December, and then the report is still pending. We did get positive feedback from them when they exited, and we had some concerns, and we've been working on those. So.
Okay. Representative Fowles, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is on the survey. When was the last time you had a survey, and what were your results on that one? Now, you said there's 16 out of 157 standards were identified for ongoing improvement. That's
pretty
good. What was it the last time that you...
That was December 2nd and 3rd of 08. We just had that.
And when was the survey before that? When was that done?
It was done annually. So
okay.
That was done
years before that, in December of 07. And what were the results on that one compared to this one?
The results on this one were much better than the previous. There were improvements, and I'm speaking from just being here 4 months, but not from
okay.
being there before.
So you don't know how many of the standards weren't hit?
Do you know that?
In December of 07. No. Okay. That's fine.
Okay. Thank you. Anything further before we go on? Okay, continue please.
And then Bill would like to talk about resident care and the quality improvement, the improvements that we've made.
Okay, thank you.
All that we do each and every day is to try to do our best to get better the next day, and how we go about do that is through the continuous quality improvement program. So we've just brought to you a few examples of quality improvement projects that we have worked on in 2008. The first one listed is our falls prevention program. And what I like to point out is with this quality data, we have a program called Eclipse for Equality, where we send our assessment data to, and then they establish our rate as a facility. They compare us to peer veteran facilities, and then a national community rate as well. And so for our falls prevention program, our Minneapolis veterans home rate was 20.5. The peer veterans rate was 12.8, and the national community rate was 19.8. And of course, when we look at those numbers, ours are a little bit high, which is a big reason why we chose this as one of our improvement projects. Through staff education to create awareness, skills fairs, putting in post-falls assessments, resident education, getting a list of available assistive devices out there so staff is very well aware of what is available and how to get it to the particular resident. We created a falling star program so that when we identified someone at high risk for fall, a star is attached to their assistive device, such as a walker or wheelchair. A star is put up in by their bed in their room, and then a small star on the doorway so that it identifies those residents that are at risk for fall for anyone in the facility. So a great attempt to realize that if somebody's getting up and has a star, we need to get there quickly. Anyone in the facility. Yes.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Smith. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just some clarification on this, because as we read through this, I think we see a couple things. One is the peer veterans rate. Could you give us a definition of peer? Who would be peer to the Minneapolis home? And as you look at these rates, is this a percentage? Is this a number of falls per thousand? Or can you give us some background? In other words, is a high number good or is a high number bad?
No. Ms. Smith.
I can do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Stevenson. The peer veterans rate, EQIP, is the company that we use to benchmark our data with, and there are a number of veterans homes throughout the United States that belong to this, so that's who we would be compared to in the peer veteran rate. The national community rate is all the long-term care facilities that are in the EQIP database, if you will. There's roughly, I believe, around 250 to 300 facilities total in our database, or in EQIP database. So that's what we're compared to. And the rate is not a number of falls per thousand residents. I'm not sure how the rate is established. I know we're comparing apples to apples. We do, in the facility, calculate our falls per 1,000 resident days as well. And I can say that in January of 2008, our rate at that point was 7.8. And in December of 2008, our rate went down to 5.6. So that demonstrates a forward progress in reducing the number of falls in our facility. And when people think of falls, not everybody defines what a fall is the same way. So just to give you an example, if we have a resident in a high-low bed and the bed goes down to 7 inches down to the floor, so they're only 7 inches off the floor, and we put a landing strip, we call it, which is a pad, and they roll out of that low bed, that's considered a fall. Just a, you know, so falls are really interesting. If we're assisting a resident to ambulate down the hall and there are two of us, one on each side assisting, that resident knees gives out and the knees get lowered. We lower that resident to the floor. That is also considered a fall. And so One of the emphasis that we put on with staff is we wanted them to report all these, even potential kinds of incidents, so we could be more proactive to prevent injury. That being said, you can see then our incidence of new fractures on the paper there. Our rate is 0.85, the peer veteran rate is 1.5, and the national community rate is 1.4, which does demonstrate, although it looks like 20.5 is a higher number, and no, that's not where we want to be. You don't want it higher in this category. That being said, we are preventing significant injuries from the falls by doing the things that we're trying to do with our assistive devices and those kinds of things.
Okay. Any follow-up, Representative Davidson?
Okay. No, Mr. Chair. Thanks.
Thank you.
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. If I could, Mr. Chair, and when you're saying peer veterans rate, so you're talking when we're looking at the peer veterans rate, we're looking at veteran homes that are of similar size throughout the United States, and then the national community would be those that are in the private sector included in that group would constitute the national community. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, yes, the peer veterans rate, they separate all the veterans homes out into the peer veterans rate. The national community rate includes everyone.
Thank you.
Okay.
And the other thing is the veterans population at each facility can differ. So it's not absolutely apples to apples.
Okay, Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know from one of my past lives that it makes a great deal of difference on these scores what kind of residents, the degree of mobility, for example, that you take in. For example, if you have a very high number of very immobile people, you're going to get a lot more pressure sores than the next institution down the road who maybe have people that can get up and run around. So simply looking at these numbers is not the only story. Would you comment on the percentage or the degree, however you do that? What kind of residents do you have? Are they more mobile, less mobile than the average nursing home population?
Ms. Smith.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Jody. I don't have actual percentages of that. We have a wide range of residents at our facility. We have some that are mobile. We have probably more of the majority of our residents are wheelchair bound and are a type of rotachair bound where they are not able to pull weight bear any longer. But other than that, I don't have any percentages with me. I can get that to this committee if you'd like.
Representative Bodie.
Mr. Chair, your improvement is so great here. You are obviously on the right track. I was just looking for a general statement there, if there would be any reason to think that you would be significantly different from another institution or something on this.
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Doty, we are, if we look at the Minneapolis Veterans Home, we are very similar to other veterans home when it comes to the population. So I wouldn't say that we're skewed in any way as far as having, you know, more that are bed-bound or, you know, wheelchair-bound. So when you look at the veterans in our home, it's a very typical nursing home population. Does that help?
That does help, Mr. Chair, and congratulations on these good numbers.
Thank you.
Okay, anything further, members, before we move forward? Okay.
The next improvement project is our pressure ulcer prevention program, and we divide that population into a high-risk residents with pressure ulcers and low-risk residents with pressure ulcers. When you talk about high-risk individuals, Representative Doty kind of touched on that. Those would be individuals that would be bed bound, can't move themselves in and out of chairs, so they're at bigger risk to create sores on the pressure areas in the body. And so looking at that, our rate of those individuals with pressure ulcers is 4.4 versus our peer veterans rate is 13.1 and the national rate at 18.2. And then low-risk residents would be individuals, say, for instance, you know, when you get a new pair of shoes and you have to break them in and you get a little blister on the toe and it opens up. That would be somebody who would be low-risk to get a pressure ulcer. And if you're at low risk, we really shouldn't be seeing you with a pressure ulcer or sore on your body. And as you can see here, our Minneapolis rate is 0.65. Our peer veterans rate is 2.5 and the national community rate is 5.95. And again, through this quality improvement project, we have done a lot of staff education. Internally, we have done skills fair, group education, one-to-one education. Externally, we have been working with a wound care specialist. We are standardizing our wound care treatment process and products so that not only are we in the facility trained to the products, but also our medical providers will be trained as well. Our training focus was a lot on assessing and identifying these high-risk people and then putting interventions in place. And then once someone does get a pressure ulcer, then the documentation and making sure we're looking at this so that we can treat them quickly, effectively, and get the skin back in good condition. And it's very much an interdisciplinary approach with working with rehab to get the pressure-relieving devices in place, nutrition to assess for increased protein needs, and then standardizing the documentation so that we all know what's going on with this particular program.
Okay. Ms. Smith, we have a question. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Smith, does your population at the Minneapolis home, is it similar to the other populations in the rest of the Minnesota homes, veterans' homes?
I would say yes.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, do the same types of reports then?
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer?
Yeah.
I believe they do. We all use the equip for quality programs to benchmark ourselves with our peers and then the nation.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, we're in the process. We actually, the Department of Veterans Affairs did a strategic plan, and then the homes did a strategic plan, and then we have done ours at the Minneapolis home. And part of that strategic plan for the five homes is to do some benchmarking and best practice with these areas, so we will be comparing ourselves and using some best practice.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good, thank you. Any further questions before we move forward? All right, go ahead, please.
The next improvement project is our nutrition and hydration project, and this looks at residents for significant weight loss and or residents who lose too much weight. And there are national standards of which we base this on to not have a 5% weight loss within 30 days or a 10% weight loss within 180 days. And as you can see, our Minneapolis rate is 4.5, the peer veteran rate 9.3, and the national community rate is 10.4. In this case, lower is much better because the population is not losing weight greater than that 5%. And we address this by creating a new weight tracking system. Again, staff education via the skills fair, one-to-one education, and just simply timely responding to weight loss. The nursing staff, once it's identified, on that weekly basis, contacts the dietary department, and the dietitian comes to and does an assessment, and we do things to make sure that the weight loss either does not go any further, or we can improve with weight gain. And another part of this, especially to demonstrate hydration, is our prevalence of urinary tract infections. Of course, if you don't drink enough, you don't flush out the system, and infections can take place. Our UTI rate at Minneapolis is 3.95. Our peer veterans rate is 8.1. And our national community rate is 11.4. Again, lower is better in this situation. So all in all, through our process of continuous improvement, we are creating systems and processes to improve resident outcomes. That's why we're all here. We want to improve the residents' outcomes, to allow them to be as functionally independent as they possibly can be, as happy in their surroundings as they possibly can be, to live a valued and wonderful life. We are doing this by automating some of our data collection, creating alerts in our automated system where possible. And instead of blaming, we have taken to looking at it as a continuous opportunity to learn, to educate both residents and staff, and also our families, by using new processes such as the lean management strategy, which is the governor's initiative. So we are starting to hold what is called Kaizen events. We've held one. We have another one scheduled here in February. Take a look at some of the really issues that we need to look at quickly and improve faster.
Okay. Any questions, members? Okay.
Resident satisfaction. I do want to end with that. Thank you, Judy. We have another company called Pinnacle who does random surveys with our residents and our families. They survey 10% of our population each month, and then look at trends and comparisons, and they're based on the contracts with other veterans' homes and community-based homes again. And in your packet you have the graph there. Is this a color graph? Okay. And if yours is black and white, it probably is not as easy to read. But you can see along the bottom there, overall quality, nursing, the dining experience, food. You can read all across the bottom there. These are the items that are discussed with the resident and or family member. And then Pinnacle creates an average of everyone that is... every facility that is surveyed, and that would be the bottom line, or the red line if it's in color. The bottom line is the Pinnacle average. Okay? And then the next line, if you look on the left side of your graph, the next line up, which would be blue in color, is the best in class. So Pinnacle establishes the best in class line, and then on the left side of the paper, the next side up, and the line just under the 4.5 mark, and it's kind of the line with the longer dashes, that would be the Minneapolis home, where we would be at in this graph. And then the top line, the little dotted line, is the veterans home comparison. So when you look at this graph, basically the Minneapolis home is doing very well in the response from the residents and our families.
Okay. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
I did not have your name, ma'am.
Joe Smith.
Smith. Thank you, ma'am.
I'm wondering if this is a great report. I mean, this basically says when we came before the committee about 2 weeks ago, there was a report that had some auditor information that, you know, I think told us what was going to happen here, that they were on a positive trend. And my understanding is that there's been some concern on the Senate side in terms of what's transpired at the Minneapolis home, but they've taken trends from 3 years back, and I think there's been a substantive turnaround at the Minneapolis home. These numbers verify that, and my hopes are, and I'm not sure, maybe you could just tell us whether or not you had an opportunity to testify before the Senate committee to reassure them that the plans that have been put in place are making a difference at the veterans' home there in Minneapolis.
Ms. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, yes, we have been before Senator Berglund's committee and have shared this information as well. But yes, we are on the right track. This does solidify that we are moving forward in a very good, positive way, and the residents and families recognize that.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Anything further, members?
See, I do have a question. This graph, we've got it in black and white. It makes it a little difficult to read. Is there a website where we could, you know, pull this up and see it in color?
Can we just give you the color page, or would you like us to email it to you?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, could you email it?
We will email it to you.
And then we'll get it off to the members. Then. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. We were trying to save on ink.
And that's understandable. We appreciate that. But the graph, you know, we appreciate that. If you can send that to us, thank you. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Smith, I believe. Could you tell me the status of the residents? Are they long-term, or have you... They're basically long-term all the time. You get new residents every year, though, too. How does that affect all your data?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, we are a long-term care facility, so yes, we have a lot of long-term residents, but we do roughly average probably 10 to 12 admissions each month. And so the information from those residents just gets inputted into the Pinnacle database, and then they randomly select who gets contacted each month.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Smith, again, you don't have discharges 10 to 12 each month either. You must be up to capacity. That's what I was kind of wondering, how it relates to your population in total. What's the long term? That's lifetime, basically? Is that what you mean?
Ms. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, we do have some discharges each month. Some due to finding a higher level of, they need a higher level of service, if you will, and so they could go to maybe an assisted living or a group home, that kind of thing. So those individuals are discharged, and then of course others are discharged due to death. Our average length of stay, probably a couple years for the residents. Does that help?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Further questions? Okay, proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'd like to talk about the CRIPA update. And prior to talking about that, I'd like to let you know, too, that the Minnesota Department of Health was in our facility this week also. So we did have our annual survey Monday, Tuesday, and they left about noon on Wednesday, and they'll be doing an exit, telephone conference exit next week. We got positive comments on that survey, and they do have some concerns, but I believe the results will be much improved from the last one. So now we have the DBA survey, and then we've had our annual Minnesota Department of Health survey, and then CRIPA. So.
Okay.
As far as the CRIPA update and that We've been working with the Department of Justice, and it's the Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act that they were concerned with. And they did come in February 3rd, I believe, and we had three attorneys, a nurse practitioner, a physician, and one person who specializes in Americans with Disabilities Act issues. They exited on that Friday. They looked at patient rights, patient dignity, the Americans with Disability Act, specifically the Olmstead portion of that, and then they looked at clinical care on all units. The lead attorney gave positive feedback. They actually, all of the members gave us positive feedback, but the lead attorney said that Minneapolis Veterans Home is not typical of what the Department of Justice has found in other United States veterans homes. There have been some of their surveys out there that have been very negative, and they just said that Minneapolis is not typical of what they do see. And the written report is pending. We have no idea how long that will take to get that report, but we won't speculate as far as what the report will say, but we will wait for that report, and then we'll share that. Consequences of the PRIPA investigation, if they conclude that there are not systemic violations of constitutional rights or other federal rights, they will notify the governor that they will be closing the investigation. And then they also said that if they would conclude that there are such violations, they will provide detailed written findings and identify the minimum measures that they believe are necessary to remedy the violations. In other words, if they find systems issues and they have some ideas or recommendations as far as those, they would share those with us. And this includes identifying any financial, technical, or other assistance the United States may be able to provide.
Okay. Members, any questions? Yeah. The report sounds excellent.
Thank you.
I'm going to change the subject a little bit if there's no other questions. And this may be way out of your field. I don't know if it is. Just tell me. But I know in the Senate that there's, and I believe in the House, there's been a bill introduced on the subject of changing the funding mechanism to Medicaid. Can you comment on that some, or am I way out of your field here?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I can comment on that. This is the first facility I've worked at that hasn't been Medicare, Medicaid certified. And actually, Mary and I both worked for the health department and did Medicare, Medicaid surveys. But we have in our strategic plan, and everyone will be receiving copies of the strategic plan. We have in our strategic plan that we would look at alternative funding sources to show fiscal integrity, and by alternative it would mean Medicare, Medicaid, whether it's HMOs or, you know, is there an alternative type of funding out there. We have that in our plan to look at that and then make recommendations to the Department of Veterans Affairs by 6/20 of 2011. So we have that on our radar screen already. In order to look at, and this is my biased opinion, but in order to look at going with Medicare and Medicaid, we really would need an analysis of, is that really feasible? Is it beneficial? There's a financial component. There's a quality of care component. We actually, the goals that we have are to meet Medicare and Medicaid standards as far as quality of care. In the industry, we call it FCAGs, but we already on the care side want to meet those guidelines, but it would take an analysis of, okay, what is it going to take? What's the impact on veterans, number one? What's the impact? And then is it really feasible? And then what would be a time frame to do that? Because it's not like saying, today we're Medicare, Medicaid, today we're not, tomorrow we will be. There are processes that need to be done prior to that. So.
If things progressed along and you were qualified for Medicare, Medicaid, would you still be eligible for the VA? Is it one or the other or both, or how does that work?
Ed, do you have? I'm not sure how to answer that question right now, but I certainly can, when we send that email out, with can answer that question.
Oh, okay.
I'm happy to do some research and get back to you on that one.
Sure, appreciate that. Thank you. Because I know there are some, well, you mentioned that too, we have to make sure that we know exactly how it affects the veterans and their eligibility and those types of things, and we don't want to do harm there, but I'm sure that your study and investigation will determine all of that. Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think while we're looking at the information that he asked for, if you could also find out if that would entail transferring the prescription drug benefits to Medicare Part D for these people instead of the VA system's present procedure. I think that's a pretty important component of costs for people.
Thank you. Okay, anything further, members? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a year ago, we had to close down one of the buildings at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. Could you address the number of beds that were in existence then, the number of beds we have now? Is there a future plan for the additional building to go forward? Could you give us a little snapshot of where we've been and where we're going on that? Mr. Chair, if we could indulge the committee for just a few minutes.
Yes, a good question. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, we took out 60 beds and actually did not need licensed beds, but those were set aside. So we have over 400 available. Right now we have capability to have 341 residents, and actually tomorrow with an admit, actually not tomorrow, but next, today or next week, doesn't matter, we will have no openings, so we will have 341 residents. As far as Building 9 is the one that was condemned, and we are in the process of, we do have the funding, and we are in the process of the design process. We're picking a design team, and we're moving forward with that. It includes the demolition of Building 9, and we have been working with the Historical Society on issues there, and that's always quite interesting. I've worked with the St. Paul Historical Society too. We will be starting the demolition hopefully the end of March, beginning of April, and then we'll move forward with the design and whatever. So probably within the next year and a half, 2 years, there will be the new building, and that will have capacity for 100 residents. And then we look at improving the quality of life for veterans as far as private rooms, private bathrooms. We will have some, double rooms, but it will certainly add to the quality of life for the veterans there.
Good. Thank you. Okay, is there anything further from members? Any closing remarks?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm just really happy to be here to be able to talk about the Minneapolis Veterans Home. We are very proud of working at the home for our veterans, and really have the residents' best interest and quality of life in mind, and really look forward to moving into the future and providing those with care and services that they so deserve.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for being here, and congratulations on your progress, too. It's really good news. We appreciate that. Okay, that's it for today. Unless members have anything else, we're adjourned.